is the legendary Humble and Fred Show, Canada's national morning show.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
The following episode of Humble and Fred Radio is brought to you by Sleep Country, Pizza Pizza, FYI Music News, and the Retirement Sherpa. And as always, we broadcast to the world from the center of Canada's universe, Toronto, nestled in the cozy bosom of the Squatty Potty storefront studios and five-hour energy performance zone. If you'd like to talk to Humble and Fred, call 1-855-662-4743. That's 1-855-ON-AIR-HF.
Releasing his 19th studio album, Murray McLaughlin, our guest on the show today, everyone. Hello, hello. Baby
child. Ba, 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 hello, ba, hello, ba. Hello. Hello, hello.
Hello.
Hello. I don't know why you say goodbye, Fred. I say hello.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey. Hey, Phil, don't worry about it. I got all Murray's songs right here in front of me. Well, thank you very much. Murray McLaughlin, who has been a, I don't know, he's got to have the Order of Canada, probably two by now. I mean, this guy's a real, he's the real deal in Canada and around the world, and we're happy to have him in our studio in less than 1 hour.
Well, won't that be exciting?
Yeah, gotcha.
I don't think there's gotcha. Anyone, I don't think there's anyone in this country across our great land that wouldn't know who Murray McLaughlin is. And when you can get a guest of that stature, you know, it's a feather in your cap, if you wore a cap.
Mm-hmm. Or feather, or had feathers around to put mm-hmm. in the caps. I agree with you wholeheartedly,
or
Mr. Patterson. A feather in your toque. I have his latest album. It's called Love Can't Tell Time. That's the name of Mr. McLaughlin's recording. Mm. How about you, Phil? Are you excited to have Canada's songbird, Murray McLaughlin, in here?
Oh, absolutely. All Canadian legends are welcome here, right? And I love that, that idea.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Couple Canadian legends right here around the microphone. Canada's national morning show, and currently the most popular one in Wisconsin. I haven't heard from anybody in Wisconsin to dispute that. So,
I wonder if Murray, sort of as a little trademark, carries a hanky.
Why don't you start with that
question?
You know,
stuffed in his pocket. Not necessarily in an old dirty one, just a hanky. Like, that's, you know, that's sort of his song and that's sort of his trademark. You know,
do you think he gives them up? Gives them out as like promotional items?
Maybe, Howie.
Like, hey, nice to meet you. I'm Murray McLaughlin. Here's a hanky for your troubles.
Maybe, Howie.
Here's a hanky for your troubles.
Maybe.
You know, I don't like to complain. I don't.
About
I mean,
what?
for comedic purposes, yes. But just in my general life, I'm not really big on complaining. But I would like to share something with you right now.
Oh, you're not.
No,
okay. You're not?
Do you think I'm a regular? No. Okay, fine.
No, no, I'm just wondering.
If that's your, if you'd like to stop the proceedings.
Hear me out.
Yeah, go ahead.
You're not big on complaining. What do you mean? Generally?
I said for comedic purposes, yes, but generally in my day-to-day life, I don't complain a lot.
All right.
But I am now officially sick of this fucking weather.
Oh, no, I know. Yeah, so am I.
Yesterday afternoon. Mm-hmm. Around 6:30, because now it feels like afternoon at 6:30. I was getting gas just over here, mm-hmm. and was blowing. The wind was blowing so hard. I almost didn't fill up. Have you ever done that?
Oh yeah,
really?
Where you just kind of? I was going
to
abort.
Just get enough to go.
Get enough to go.
Yeah.
And I sat there and I was enduring this, and I was kind of sort of. I didn't think I was doing it that loudly, but I was kind of going fuck like this.
Oh, I know.
And there was a guy. A bay across from me kind of looked at me when I said, fuck. And he looked at me, we sort of nodded. I'm like, I'm just tired of being cold. And he goes, yeah, I hear you, or something that guys say.
Just over a week ago, all the ice and snow on top of my pool cover had completely melted. So it was like a little pool on top of a pool, right?
Sure.
And I remember a fleeting thought of, well, maybe I'll pump that off soon because it's probably not going to freeze again. Now, you look out there, it's, you know what, it looks angry out there.
Yeah, it's an angry day.
Because, you know, when it was refreezing, the wind was blowing, so there's all ripples on it, and then dusted snow, and really, this past week's probably been the worst of the winter, hasn't it, or not?
Well, I know we said that yesterday.
Like with the bitter, biting cold?
Absolutely.
I don't recall that.
Oh, yeah. Sub-zero and then some.
But yeah, that wind yesterday afternoon, like I was saying to Freddie before he left yesterday, you know, it's like it's been, I don't like to not walk my dog. It's not just a responsibility. I mean, that's what you do. You have a dog and you get him outside every day. 3 days in a row, probably, and that's what I would tend to agree with what you just said. I haven't had 3 days in a row this winter when I haven't taken that dog outside. And I'm going to tell you, every time I have taken him out for a pee or just out there in the back, he's freezing.
Mm-hmm.
He's got no protection. I don't have a jacket. I know, get a jacket for your dog. I'm not one of those people.
Too
cold.
On the weekend, I was up north, Burley Falls area, Lovesick Lake area, bitterly cold, like, as you know, but up there even colder.
Yeah.
Dan Duran's dog, Clifford, who I love dearly, he was sitting outside there. We were trying to get a fire going to warm up and make the most of a day. And Clifford's sitting there, and we looked, and the end of his pecker was frozen, where a bit of urine had stuck, and we didn't know what to do. It didn't seem to be bothering him, and then he and then he licked it away.
Yeah.
But we're looking at Dan did? Dan did. Then we look at the ice chunk on Clifford's pecker.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that's awful, eh?
Mm, little
and
frostbite.
Then, when you think about it, too, like, we're all inside and we bundle. I had, like, 4 layers on and I put snow pants on and everything. The fucking dogs, right? They're inside with their fur. You open the door and he runs out.
Yeah, I know.
And they're totally adaptable, except for his pecker freezing.
Yeah.
Mm. They are naked, after all.
No, for sure. And yeah, that would be it. I don't think there's been this entire winter, maybe one or usually one day. It's never been two. It's certainly never been three where I haven't been outside with that dog. And I said to him last night, I said, buddy, no matter what's going on tomorrow, I'm getting you out. Although I just looked at the forecast for Toronto today, and it's going to go up above freezing for the first time this week. But the winds are gusting 35.
Wow.
Like, enough. God,
I'll tell you, this sun and plus one or two, it could feel nice. Mm. But with the winds, it just screws everything up.
Well, the next 3 or 4 days are all above zero, but pretty windy. You know, speaking of our friend Dan and his dog Clifford and things, all things Dan Duran.
I'm Dan Duran.
Yeah. He was babysitting, or what do they call it? House sitting for some friends, for Liz West, actually.
Really? Oh, right. They're on vacation right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Big podcaster, broadcaster, and a beautiful woman.
In the
Liz West. So he met me in the east end of this city. I got a couple things I want to run by you. But this is the thing that was sort of funny. So Dan makes the reservation at this little east end Toronto hipster place. You know, it's very, very nice. Whatever, Dan Duran. And the young waitress lady with, can you call them, are they called waitresses? Or serving staff?
Waiting staff or
do you even
server?
Know? Can we call them?
All that's passed me by, Howard.
I thought it was a server, like served
the
by.
The woman who was serving us.
Ah, the employee.
Very, very nice person. Very attractive. I got there just before Dan, and I said, table for two, and she sat me down. And then Dan arrived and said, I have a reservation for Dan Duran. And she didn't know him as, you know, this legendary whatever he is. She says the following, Dan Duran. And then she looks at him. You know, she takes the temperature of the room. She looks at Dan Duran and says, Dan Duran, with a name like that, you should be a, this is word for word, newscaster or a weatherman.
Get out.
I swear.
What?
She says with a name. Well, first of all, she sees him in his giant, handsome head. And she says, with a name like Dan Duran, you should be a newscaster or a weatherman.
Wow.
I know.
That's crazy.
Oh, it made me laugh. I loved it.
And the reason why is because any part Dan gets in a movie, and I think the credits are up near 100 now, he plays a newscaster.
Or a weatherman.
Yeah. You know, there was a big movie. Oh, geez. I meant to make a mental note of it. And, of course, I'm mental, so I didn't make a note of it. A pretty big movie. One of the Academy Award nominations, I think, you hear Dan's voice. I forget which one.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, one of the big movies. It's just really... Oh, Arrival.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. And that was nominated, wasn't it?
It was.
And his voice is just on there for a split second.
You know, I remember that when I was watching it in the movie theater just before I fell asleep.
Right.
Fucking never got that movie. And I love that shit.
Yesterday I watched Jackie. Don't waste it. Was, and I love Kennedy stuff, but no. Wasn't big on it.
Did you watch it on the Humble and Fred Screener Network?
Yes.
Okay. Isn't you said you were going to make a mental note, but isn't a mental note just a thought?
Pretty much. I mean, you wouldn't be able to verbally mention it.
Well, here's what. Because I'm watching it, Arrival, I hear Dan's voice, and I thought, oh, if there was a pen and pad at hand, I would just jot, oh, I heard Dan's voice, and what do you think? But I didn't. I didn't want to get out from under my blanket. So I thought, I sat there, do you ever do this and go, okay, think about this 3 or 4 times now, and then you won't forget it. Okay, make a mental note of remembering this. And sometimes it works, and more often than not, it does. But in this case, it actually did, didn't it? Because I'm telling you about it.
It's no longer just a mental note. Now it's a verbalization.
It's a note now.
It's a note.
Somewhere exactly. in my mind, it was in a file in my mind.
You filed it under Dan Duran movie appearances.
Yeah, according to IMDb, Dan Duran plays a TV anchor. That's the official part.
Yeah.
In Arrival.
In Arrival?
That's right here. Yeah, Dan Duran, best known for Arrival.
Can you... Yes. Can you see on Dan Duran's IMDb how many movies he's been in? Does it have a running total? I think he might be a little high at 100, but it's certainly in the 60s and 70s.
Oh, is it?
Oh, right. It's got to be. Right. Yeah, she says, you should be a newscaster or a weatherman.
77 movies.
77?
Yeah.
God. And there's no stopping, by the way. He'll get to 100 easily.
You know what the funny thing is? If you took all those parts and edited them together of him in those movies, it might be 5 minutes.
Right. I don't know about that.
Huh?
I think it wouldn't be long, but
because a lot of those are just like
just on screen for a couple
15
seconds.
15 seconds of him doing a newscaster thing.
You know, you might be right. You'd think with 77 movies, it would be. I'll tell you what, it would be a great. The Dan Duran Film Festival, I've often thought, would be a fun thing for all of us to do.
Well, he should do that. He should take all his parts, make a reel of it, and that would sound very impressive. Because all together, it would be like, listen, this could be a lot longer than 5 minutes, but that would be too long.
Let me give you a sample.
This is a sample of my theatrical performances.
Well, there are some good movies in his list, like X-Men, Death to Smoochie, Soul Food. Oh, no, that's a TV show. He's in a lot of popular culture. I think that's impressive.
Well, with Dan, we love him so much. Just once on those 77 movies, walking across the set, from trailer to trailer, from set to set. It's too bad just one person couldn't have said, wait a minute, look at that guy. We got to give him a bigger part. Look at that chiseled look. We need him. There's more in this business for him than just these little 20-second parts. Why didn't that ever happen? 77 cracks.
77, man.
He had 77 cracks at it.
77. I don't know.
Still.
I just, how would that be? Some guy with a headset sees Dan's giant head just bobbing amongst the crowd and says, hang on a second, newscaster Dan. Get over here and get emotional. Take that big Germanic head of yours and get emotional.
On the subject of movies,
yes.
It just let you appreciate how backward still parts of the world are. Walt Disney Studios has refused to cut a brief gay-themed scene from Beauty and the Beast as demanded by government censors in Malaysia, meaning the film will not open on Thursday as scheduled. Can you believe this? So the government of Malaysia went and said, yeah, I'm sorry, you're going to have this movie, but one scene, and I don't know what the scene is they're talking about.
What's that, Phil?
There was probably a gay kiss in that.
No, I saw this story. I didn't know it was Malaysia. I saw the story. It was brewing for a while because, I don't know, did you guys not see that there was something about the new animated... Whatever it is.
Some people were talking on social media about how gay the movie was.
Sorry, it's not animated, but there's apparently one of the characters in the castle that comes alive is homosexual.
The film has not been and will not be cut for Malaysia, Disney Studios said in a statement Tuesday without elaborating. Well, good for them. pretty bizarre, eh? And, that's the prevailing in Malaysia, isn't that the prevailing, like the general pop, right, would be all right with that?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, yeah. It's a very conservative society, like Singapore beside it as well, in fact. Yeah, Indonesia, that area.
And you just think of what becomes a gay, lesbian, transgender, whatever. What do we call it now? LGBA?
T plus 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 two.
LGBQ ASAP.
Can you imagine? What is an issue for that community here?
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
In Malaysia?
Oh, Christ.
But can you imagine an entire country, I don't care if it's Malaysia or any other of these places on the planet, in 2017 is actually concerned about some mildly gay-themed scene in a Disney movie?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm guessing their pride parade's pretty short. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, fuck, quick, go out. Go back in.
Involves a tear gun.
Quick, get the dragon. Get the dragon head.
Abdul Halim Abdul Hamid, Badawi, chairman of the Malaysian censor board, says, it is in our guidelines that we don't allow LGBT activities in movies in Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Unbelievable. He said we would have approved the movie. This is what kills me. What's the big deal? We would have approved it with a minor cut. Like, like to him, that's being rational. No problem with the movie. Just cut out that gay part and we're good to go.
Does anyone know what the actual scene is? Does it say in the article what it is?
I don't know. Disney's Le Fou too gay for some?
Le Fou?
Le Fou.
That's Le Fou. Le Fou.
Is that from Beauty and the Beast?
I don't know.
All right. Anyway, I don't know.
I'll tell you what I like is the girl that plays Beauty in that is Emma Watson.
Right.
Who I find adorable. I've watched her, and I don't mean in a, gross old man, whatever way, but I think she's beautiful. I think, and she was Hermione in all the Harry Potter films.
Yes.
Are you guys Harry Potter people? Is that a not you?
You? But she, you see, but the point is, my kids love that, and I went to every movie, and I thought they were entertaining. But you see her grow up.
Yes.
And she's one of those sort of Jodie Foster types. Yes. I don't know if she's a lesbian. But she's one of those Jodie Foster types that was a child actress, very, very wealthy, and never needed to do, any schooling. And then sort of when she got to be a little older, 17 and 18, I think she went to, if not Harvard, something like Harvard. She's a very bright person. And again, that's the Jodie Foster thing. That story, child actress, got older, went to Yale or something. And this is what this girl did.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw the trailer for Beauty and the Beast, the gay film. And I went, oh, look at her. She's really...
Is it again?
Pardon me?
Emma Watson.
Isn't it Emma Watson?
I believe it was.
Oh, no. I'm thinking of Emma Stone. Like, I'm not big on my actors and actresses. Like, I just want to see what she looks like here.
But she's one of those people that's just beautiful.
Oh,
but
chiseled face.
But in a sort of, when I say adorable, not in a... it's hard.
Cute teddy bear sort of way.
But not in a... I don't find her super sexy. I think she's just adorable looking. The same way, having seen her grow up, the first movie of Harry Potter, whenever it came out, she would have been 12 or 13.
Oh, yeah, hair flowing everywhere, curls and everything.
But, she's really, turned into a beautiful young woman.
Was it on air or off air that I mentioned the movie Jackie? Was it... Since the show began, or was it?
Oh, yeah. You did mention Jackie. Don't watch it.
I wasn't sure whether it was before the show or after. What was that, 10 minutes ago?
Yeah.
Anyway, Natalie Portman plays Jackie. Striking woman.
Yeah, another smarty pants, Natalie Portman.
Mm-hmm.
Emma Watson went to Brown University, which is, I don't know, it's one of those Ivy League style.
It's up there.
It's up there.
Mm-hmm.
She's not a dummy. Not a dummy.
No. Boycotts in Hong Kong over this movie.
Over Beauty and the Beast.
Even though they have a pride parade and everything.
Where do people get the time?
It's just, listen, in a perfect world, it shouldn't even be an issue, but it just lets you appreciate how advanced we are here in the West, and Canada in particular, compared to other parts of the world. It's something else.
I was talking to Pearl about this, ironically, last night, and because... by coincidence, we were talking about public displays of affection. And she's like, we can kiss in public, Phil? And I'm like, yep. Because even in Cambodia, holding hands, like I was taking a taxi back to the airport, and I kissed her hand because I thought, you know, I want to be all romantic and such. And the driver looked at me as if I was a pervert.
How
perverse of you, holding hands with this lady.
He saw that little pencil dick sticking out of your trousers.
No ring.
He's like, Mr. Hong, is that a lipstick in your pants?
Don't be an Asian lefeur.
Did you see that story, too? Speaking of public displays of affection in... I think it was a Subway sandwich shop in London. The guy, they order a sandwich like at 2 in the morning or something. The guy gets up behind his girlfriend while she's picking her condiments, drops her doors and starts banging her from the rear.
Pickles! Pickles!
And they
in the Subway shop?
Right in the sandwich shop.
And do we have video of this?
Yeah, it's there. All right. It's out there somewhere.
Sandwich shop. What should I Google? Sandwich shop.
But the funny part of
butt
this...
sex?
The funny part of the story is... They're looking for her, and they may have got her already. She's going to be arrested, but not him. And the reason is, even though it was he who pulled down her pants, in the video, you could see her bare ass, and that is against the law. You couldn't see any of him. And he actually gets behind her and pulls her pants down. Enters her from the rear. Now she's going to be arrested. It was consenting. It wasn't at all. But that's the thing. And that's her defense. It was like, well, wait a minute. He pulled my pants down. But to show your buttocks in
a Subway.
Yes.
In public in Britain apparently is against the law.
Well, I can't find it. Right now I've got
I'll get it.
Sub shop bathroom fuck. Sub shop doesn't matter. It's as in submissive. But how are you so impatient that you can't wait for the order to go through before your order goes through? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You want some salami on that bun?
You want that toasted?
How do your buns feel with my salami? Are you looking that up? Because I wanted to come back to where Dan and I were last night.
Okay.
No, that's fine.
Right on.
Do you have it?
It's here somewhere. I'll get it to you.
So, like I said, Dan was house-sitting. I had a gig last night in the west end, the east end of the city. And, you know, you grew up in Scarborough.
Yes.
Did you know that?
Yes.
And other than a brief period of time when Lady Friend lived up by Johnny's Hamburgers there.
Did she really?
Yeah.
I didn't know she lived up
there. Sure you did. Remember we had this conversation years ago where I said I started going to Johnny's Hamburgers and you said, Howard, I grew up around there in the
70s. Oh,
yeah. And okay, I said, what happened was for a while Amanda had an apartment a block from Johnny's because she was working at a call center up north there. And so...
Oh, all right.
For that year or so, or eight months, you know, that's where we would hang out. And I got to sort of experience. And that's like, well, your area, Scarborough, wasn't so great. But this area where she lives now is still not that great. Although it's starting to come around. But it was still a little bit of a sketchy neighborhood.
What do you mean where she lives now?
Where she was living there.
Oh, okay.
Victoria Park and Shepherd in Toronto.
Yes.
It's not a great neighborhood.
No.
And it still isn't, is my point. Whereas your neighborhood... Your Scarborough neighborhood is starting to, is it no?
Gentrify.
No?
No.
It's starting to what?
I thought it started to get a little gentrification there.
You know what? I don't go there a lot, but where I am is not what it used to be. Let's put it that way.
It used to be nicer or less nice?
Nicer.
Oh, it did? Okay, cool.
Oh, Jesus, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. When I was a kid, it was typical... suburbia.
Oh, okay. See, I thought it was the other way around. I thought it had been...
It wasn't developed nearly... Okay. Remember, I left there in 78.
So there's a landmark place there, and the reason I bring that up is because our friend Rich Murray had took, I think, his son to Johnny's Hamburgers.
Right,
or,
I saw the photo.
Is it Johnny or Johnny's?
Johnny's?
Freddie?
Johnny's.
Johnny's.
And it's one of those places in a city where, you know, whatever the hood is... Mm-hmm. People would come from all over the city to go have a hamburger there. And, like, again, for about 8 months, I was a block from there. And whenever I could, I'd have one of their hamburgers. They're fucking insane. And Richard put up a picture of, you know, the storefront. It's a little sort of a drive-in.
Yeah, and that sign hasn't changed. Just along Shepherd going east, there was a car dealership there called Donhausen Chevols.
Is that where you park cars?
That's where I worked.
Seriously.
So every Saturday, when I worked part-time, every Saturday I'd go up and rearrange the lot from the busy week. every lunch, I went over to Johnny's. That was where you went.
Well, I posted on Richard's thing that it's like one of those places that's got great drunk food. You know, like you've had a few beers and you're sort of, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning hungry. And, but yeah, it's nice. Why is it so good? Just because it's like that's, you know, old fashioned hamburger or whatever.
That was back in late 60s. McDonald's first came to Scarborough. And it was just, you know, there was a McDonald's hamburger and then there was a Char Pit burger. And they were two completely different things, right? Well, you know, they still are.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the norm in Scarborough. And when you wanted a hamburger, there was Harry's across from Winston Churchill on Lawrence Avenue. And then down where I lived, there was a place called JMP Burger. They were all similar, those big patties. And then those places like the onion rings were always so good. And yeah, you get lost in those in a big box of fries, fresh cut fries.
So what I was going to say is, even other than that 8 month period or so, and by the way, for context, in that neighborhood is Universal. It's where Ivor works.
Where Ivor works, yeah.
Universal Canada.
Yeah.
Our buddy Ivor Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that brief period where for a while I was in the East End a lot.
Mm.
But I'm never, my whole world in Toronto has been west of Yonge Street. And that's what I was saying to Dan last night. Mm-hmm. We were in Leslieville, Queen and whatever, mm-hmm. Carla. And there's this whole world, and I'm not talking about, you know, the beaches and all that shit. There's a whole world of Toronto that if you grew up in Scarborough or stayed in the East End, Leslieville, or any of those neighborhoods, you have no knowledge of this side of the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's like point is, and I guess it's I don't even know if it's a point, but it's an observation that in big, big cities, they have all these pockets mm-hmm. where people live, and you can live your whole life and never really know what's going on in the other.
Sure.
Like my vision of Toronto is very, you know, sort of Bloor West Village and then the West End here and living in Oakville and Mississauga. All that stuff out there in the east where we were last night, all those people would never have any reason to go to Brampton, or all their stuff would be going north and east.
Sure.
And you're sort of rare in that you grew up in the east end of the city, mm-hmm. and yet most of your adult life has been mm-hmm. west of the city.
You know, I was explaining this to my son the other day because he lives at a condo right beside the Sky Dome. And I sent him a picture of the CN Tower just after it was completed in 1976, and the angle was looking down where his condo would be. Yeah. And it's just amazing that there's nothing in 1976 around the tower.
Right, there'd be the rail areas.
That's what I said to him. That was the scuzzy part of the city in sort of recent history. We're almost into the 80s. And to see those pictures. Now, the same thing when I was a kid living in Scarborough. Scarborough was a squeaky clean suburb. All the nice bungalows and the new shopping malls. But over the past 30 years, it's sort of gone downhill. While you were in Scarborough living in this new suburbia, places that are now cool and expensive, those were the shitholes. Like Leslieville, that area.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, all along the Danforth there, Danforth and Pave, these are all old, broken down houses that were there for years. And that was, if you were in Scarborough and you went down there, it was almost like, ooh, geez, it'd be awful to live here. And it's just amazing how that's flipped. Where you go to Scarborough now, it's gone downhill, where all these other communities that were looked down upon 30 years ago are now the place you want to be. It's amazing what's happened to the city. And that's why it's such a great city, because it's a people's city.
Well, that picture you showed me from 76 with sort of grass around the Sky Dome or scuzzy.
Well, the dome's not even there.
Or, no, I'm sorry, around the tower.
Yeah.
Even when I moved here in 1989, I remember when that was the year the Sky Dome opened.
Right.
None of those apartments, none of that stuff down by the lakeshore, none of it was there. Danny's building, all that stuff. In fact, I said to your son, do you know his name is Daniel?
Yes.
I said to Dan, we were at his place last year doing some work, and I said, you know, when your dad and I first moved downtown, this area was a 9-hole.
Yeah.
Golf course.
Yeah.
He's like, what? I said, yeah. All this little square, the developers made it into a golf course.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know why, Phil? For tax purposes.
Mm.
They bought the land And somehow or another, there was this deal where if they put something on it as a placeholder before development, they save money on the zoning of it.
Oh, wow. The property taxes and things.
But whatever it was, I remember going down there with our friend Cliff Cohn, who was a sales guy at the Edge, and we played nine holes at lunchtime. It was like 100, like a little, not a pitch and putt, whatever they call that. Like 100, all the holes were like 80 yards, 100 yards, right where his apartment is.
Right. You know, and there's a great lesson in this because, you know, I'm not one for spending public money on stadiums. And listen, the whole Sky Dome thing was a fucking debacle. But, you know, when they say it's a good idea to build sports facilities downtown because it initiates other development. That is such a story around that whole area. You know, when the Dome first opened, the only place you could get a beer other than inside the stadium was the Hard Rock Cafe, which you could access from the outside and then watch the game if you paid a little extra. You could watch the game from inside the Hard Rock Cafe. Remember the windows along
on
the,
front
the outfield?
Yes. The Hard Rock on front.
No, it was right in the stadium.
Oh, right, right. Yes, yes, you're right. Yeah.
Long gone.
Yeah.
But that was the only place, if you went down before a game, that's the only place you could get a beer outside of the actual stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Well, look now. Like, it's within a, what, a two-minute walk? Look at the restaurants, the bars, and all that stuff that's been developed. Same with the ACC, building it there at Yonge and Bay. There was virtually, even since it was built 20 years ago, there was virtually nothing there. Now look. Look what it's done.
Whatever year we worked in Brampton and Key 590 was still in the Toronto Star building, I remember going to that building, which is number one Yonge Street.
Mm-hmm.
It's at the base of Yonge and Front. I remember going there, and it was basically, that was the big building around there, and there wasn't much else. You know, where the Weston Harbor Castle is, that was there. But really, around that whole area, you know, there's a thing I saw a week or so ago, and it was an app or a, I don't even know what the word is, but it showed a picture of Toronto and you could scroll right or left. You could move the map.
Oh, yeah, the virtual tour.
The virtual, and it showed you know, what the city was and what
then
the city.
And now,
then and now. It's fascinating.
No, I know.
But back to the little neighborhoods, like there I was in Leslieville or whatever it's called, and I've been there a bunch of times recently. But as I was saying to Dan, like you can live your entire life in a city like Toronto, New York, Chicago, and your existence can just be in a pretty small area. Like if you're in Leslieville, you're never coming out here. And it took me 15 minutes to get home last night. So it's only a 15-minute drive. But this might as well be Kitchener.
Unless there was a real special restaurant or something.
Unless.
That was really unique and you know. Mm-hmm. No, you're right. But at the same time, you could actually pick this up and place it over there and take that and place it over here and it would be the same thing. It's just where you live and wanting to be close to where, you know, it's all about accessibility. So,
you know, when I first moved to Vancouver, I remember going back to my mom and dad's for, you know, Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever, the first break. I moved there in May and I came home for the first time in December. And in that 6 or 7 months, because I'd only ever lived in a small city, what I remember saying to my mom and dad is, it's funny, the amount of city I used in Vancouver was the size of, you know, the amount of city you use anywhere.
Right, in one neighborhood.
Well, exactly. I was, you know, you just sort of stay in the neighborhood that's closest to you. And it's very much like that in Toronto.
You know, on the flip side of that.
Flip it.
I've been going north of Peterborough has changed quite a bit. But I've been going just north of Peterborough now for, I'm like, 53 years. It is scary in 53 years what has not changed. You get north of Peterborough, go up Highway 28, I'm telling you, Howard, other than maybe the one little general store in Burley Falls, actually, nothing has changed. It's like scary. It's like time has stood still, and it makes sense. There's no people there. There's no stimulus for development or anything. It's just the same.
Mm.
And that's not even 2 hours away. It's crazy.
I was going to say, when we go back to Moose Jaw, it hasn't changed much, but it's changed. It's changed a lot, even in the time since my father passed away. Before we getting any further, let's we got a brand new Linda Morgan is here. Linda.
Hey, what's up with you? Oh, not much.
Linda Morgan, one of the producers of this program, has been very, very busy, haven't you?
Yeah, pretty busy. you know, looking for more work and busy, like, looking for a guitar player for our band.
Submissive Blenders? What's the...
Bicycle Mishaps.
Bicycle Mishaps.
Oh, my gosh. And we were supposed to meet a guitar player on the weekend. Biggest bitch imaginable.
No.
Yes.
She came in and she thought she'd take over?
No, she just canceled everything at the last minute. And she was all like, oh, you're not understanding of my personal problems. And it's like, okay, you know, basically from everything she told me, it sounded like her personal problems and her lack of money made it impossible for her to commit to anything. And so it's just like, why would I want to be in a band with that? Because this was like the second time that she canceled on us.
No, you don't need that.
Yeah, exactly.
Why create a problem right out of the gate?
Exactly. Yeah.
But Linda's been busy working on another song. Now, what do we need to know about this song, Lynn?
Well, it's a Queen parody. And I figured, you know, since Phil just did a couple of humble poop songs, we need a Fred one, so.
Right. So right now, it's if you're keeping track, it's Howard Pooh Songs 2 and a Fred Pooh Song 1. Here we go. This song is called Another Poo Leaves Fred's Butt. Boom, 97.3.
Fred walks wearily to the toilet. His pants pulled on low.
Yeah.
Ain't no sound but the sound of fart. Poop machine's ready to blow. Is he ready? Hey, is he ready for this? Is he sitting on the toilet seat? Out of his butt, the poop bullet. Ripped to the sound of the beat, World's worst singing. Another poo leaves Fred's butt. Another poo leaves Fred's butt. And another poo flashed, and another poo flashed. Poo leaves Fred's butt. Hey, he's got a poop more poo. Another poo leaves Fred's butt.
I think my favorite line is, hey, what was that? He's got a poo.
Another poo leaves Fred's butt.
That's the whole song?
No, there's, I basically did, like, the whole song there. There's a line at the end, you know, what does he do when there's no toilet around? He goes to the woods and wipes with a leaf. He goes on his neighbor's lawn.
Another poo leaves Fred's butt. Another poo leaves Fred's butt.
Yeah, baby.
And another poop flash.
I got to start a whole new file on my computer of just Humble and Fred poo songs. Thank you, Linda Morgan.
Thank you.
Nice job, my friend.
Thank you.
It's funny. I didn't do this on purpose, but I took Linda's song and I placed it on this computer program that I use to fire music and sound effects and stuff. And it's actually on a line. It says, farty, farty, shit, poo stain, Fred, farty, farty, poop. The Golden Turd Contest, and Another Poo Leaves Fred's Butt.
That's wonderful.
That's quite the legacy.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Not to mention the fun, our shitter contest.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm telling you, Howard, that file will only grow, I'm sure.
Hard to believe we're not more successful. Another Poo Leaves Fred's Butt. Nice job, Linda.
Thank you.
All right.
Another Poo Leaves Fred's Butt. Another Poo Leaves Fred's Butt.
And by the way, for you keeping track, the poo song, Another Poo Leaves Fred's Butt, has got another minute left in it.
Yeah.
We'll resume with more of this sparkly entertainment in a second or two. It's Humble and Fred Radio around North America on Sirius XM.
Hi, this is Sean Cullen, and you're listening to Canada Laughs. Please stop it. P-A-P. I have a pen. I have an apple. Apple pen.
Humble and Fred Radio around North America. Great to be with you on this Thursday, March 16th. If you're downloading the show, and you can do that, you can check out our podcast as the door opened and Murray McLaughlin. Okay, everybody, get away. Everybody, everyone get set for Murray. Actually, you know what? No, let's get Mr. McLaughlin settled down. Get him a coffee. You do that, Phil. Anthony, stay here. And we'll get Murray all settled for his appearance. Fred, in the meantime, this program baked fresh each and every day with the help of folks like Sleep Country.
Sleep Country, Canada. One Island.
go to sleepcountry.ca. Look at their e-flyer. Unbelievable. What's going on at your Sleep Countries? They have the $619 queen set. Sealy, fantastic. Big brand name, great quality. Organic cotton, queen set, $619. They have the Tempur-Pedic Spring Spectacular. Click on, read all about it. They have the Spring Mix and Match event as well. That's where the mattress and box spring don't match, but it's top quality stuff, and it's good to go.
Yeah.
This is Sleep Country Canada, mattresses, pillows, linens, and more. Go into a location, talk to a sleep expert. Sleep Country Canada, why buy a mattress anywhere else?
Yesterday, the wonder that is Jim Carr, the great Jim Carr, doing some studio work. Every day we try and improve the quality of this program. And the reason I bring it up is because Jim's been great to us, but also he asked me a question. He said, what do you think, even if I'm not ready to invest right now, do you think I should have the retirement Sherpa check out my portfolio? And you know what I said? I said, yes, you should, Jim.
Never too late.
Tim is a portfolio manager when Tim and Jim get together. Tim is with Raymond James, a member of the Canadian Investors Protection Fund. And a lot of the listeners have been checking out Tim. Look and see what the big picture is for your financial wherewithal. Tim's in tomorrow. We're going to talk about all kinds of things that he's got a thing he sent me about the millionaire methodologies. It's the habits of people that accrue great wealth. Tim will pass that on. And he's the kind of guy that can help you turn whatever you have into more. Tim Niblett is the retirement Sherpa. Murray McLaughlin in the Humble and Fred studios, even as we speak. Murray.
He's just having his coffee and settling down.
Yeah, let's get everyone settled down.
We should have had some baked goods for Murray McLaughlin. We don't usually have baked goods, but we should have.
Well, I could whip up something.
Could you?
Just throw something in the oven.
Oh.
Some crescent rolls.
Howie.
Whoa.
Howie.
You know, we should have some Pillsbury dough just for this kind of occasion where we could send Anthony up there to my place, put a few crescent rolls in the oven.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anthony, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
And you're here on Reading Week. You don't even have to be here.
It's not Reading Week.
What is it?
It's Reading Week was 2 weeks ago.
Ah.
That's when I was here like three times.
No, I can't remember. I can't keep track.
Someone take Mr. McLaughlin's jacket, put it someplace. Someone take a picture of it, put it on eBay.
We'll get Murray settled down. Look at him. Murray McLaughlin's going, how? Murray's saying to himself, of all the things I've had to do in my life to promote my music, is this where I'm at now? Yeah.
Hi, buddy.
Anthony, I think we're going to get Murray to sit down. But Anthony, give us one more minute for this kid. So what is your story? A guy got a potato?
Yeah. Dirk Nowitzki, legendary basketball player, probably like my favorite basketball player. He had 30,000 points in his career, which is like top five for NBA history. So when you get an achievement like that, the best thing you could get is a potato in the mail with like a message on it, just basically written on it. And this is a company. This company, Potato Parcels, was on Shark Tank. Mark Cuban's the owner. Well, obviously he's on Shark Tank. He's the owner of the Mavericks. So, I don't know. It's kind of connected, I guess.
Is that where Dirk played his basketball?
In Dallas.
Yeah. In Dallas? On the Mavericks?
Mavericks.
So this story is he received a potato with a message on it.
That said, like, congratulations.
Oh.
That's the story?
Yeah. Yeah.
What when you were putting this together and you said, "Oh, I'll bring this story in for Humble and Fred." You know, you've completely ignored the Snoop Dogg Donald Trump battle. That little you hear about that yesterday?
Yeah, I heard about
that's
it.
One, I'm just curious. So yesterday there was a big story about Donald Trump tweeting to Snoop Dogg. There was that. There was the story about WestJet going having to missed approach on a flight into Saint Martin or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you heard that story?
Yeah.
Hey, well, how about the 22-year-old hacker from Ancaster? It was a huge story, and right about your age.
Yeah, guy. So, but let's just now you know where I'm going here. So Trump and Snoop Dogg, WestJet flight almost goes in the water. 22-year-old hacker in Hamilton, and all of those stories you heard of, but you went with the potato story.
It's offbeat, you know, keeping the show fresh.
You're off beat.
Yeah. Is it a russet potato?
Although I love that.
Gives
I mean,
unique content.
What was that question, Phil?
Was it a russet potato?
Oh, that makes it a better story.
Gold? Yeah, it was. I think it was a Yukon Gold. Yeah.
No, that makes it a much better
Although
story.
Although, you know, it's like, if there is something to that business, you got to love it. It's like, you know, the old pet rock thing and everything. It's
oh,
like
sure.
Somebody thinks of something. Let's get potatoes, which cost virtually nothing, and message and mail them. And I mean, from that standpoint, it's like, wow.
Anyway,
people good. Think of that stuff.
You know what? And Anthony, maybe Mr. Patterson's right. Way to dig. Way to dig below the surface.
Because everyone's talking about these things. No one's talking about this. You know?
Everyone's talking about the Trump-Snoop Dogg battle. Yeah. Like, just when you think, oh, come on.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I don't even know that story. I actually don't know that story.
Oh, you don't?
I heard of it just out there, but I don't know the details.
Well,
I don't know the details.
Why don't we...
I believe Snoop Dogg did a music video.
I know the details.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Okay, thanks, Phil. What happened was, in a Snoop Dogg video where everybody is a clown, so all the characters are clowns, the family, you know, you see basically... You know, sort of a typical day in the world, but everybody in it is dressed in clown makeup, including they go to a clip of a television clown who's the president. He's got the orange hair, but he's got clown makeup like everyone else in the video. Mm-hmm. And at some point, somebody takes a plastic gun and points it at him. But it's just a brief shot in the video. Good taste, bad taste. Who cares? It's Snoop Dogg. So the last time anyone mentioned Snoop Dogg was years ago. But doesn't matter. It's kind of a non. It's not showing him assassinating him. It's just a stupid drug induced.
Although I'm looking,
dream.
I'm looking at the still here, and it's Snoop Dogg holding a gun directly at the head of a guy who's obviously Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Well, it is.
Yeah, no, I get that.
No, I'm saying so. Go back a couple of years if somebody did that in a video, and it was obviously Barack Obama. How do you think that would have gone over?
And absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's why I said good taste, bad taste isn't the point. When you're the president, you can't tweet about it.
Right.
He says, can you imagine, and just to your point, he goes, can you imagine what the outcry would be if at Snoop Dogg, comma, failing career and all, had aimed and fired the gun at President Obama? Question mark, jail time. Well, first, no. There is no jail time for making a music video.
No.
And I don't think it's in, whether it's in good taste or bad taste is my point. It's not the point.
No, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
It's the president of the United States tweeting a rapper.
Right.
It's just, you got to stop tweeting rappers and Alec Baldwin and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Anyway.
Well, I heard Sean Hannity say the other night that at first he called Donald Trump and said, you should stop the tweeting. And now he thinks he should continue. Yeah. Well, why? Because it's just, you know, it's keeping everybody, you know, whatever.
Distracted.
Involved, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose. Thanks, Anthony. Mm.
All right, Phil, let's get you there. Yep,
and if Murray McLaughlin wants to, after you finish tuning, you want to come sit down. Murray, we're going to have you chit-chat for a while, and then we'll grab your guitar.
Hey, you don't have a chair with arms on it, do you?
What's that, my friend?
A chair without any arms?
Yeah,
we
behind you.
Yeah, but you know what, guys? We'll have you sing after. We'll get that chair set up, but you sit down first, and then we'll get you all set up the guitar in a bit.
Mm-hmm. Unless you want to, right from the get-go, sit down on a chair without arms.
I could sit down on a chair without arms.
Right. Yeah, well, right there.
Let's
so let's just
arms. And play the guitar.
Yep. Right on.
And drink coffee.
You can do it all. You can do it all because you're Murray McLaughlin.
Yeah. Murray McLaughlin. No, I listen, and by the way, yeah, you're right. No,
that wasn't the point you were making. Yeah. I get it now. No, yeah.
You know, if you're doing a music video and you'd, like, look at all those artists in the 80s and 90s with George Bush and Ronald Reagan and all. I mean, it's art. Well, Snoop Dogg videos, maybe not art, but I mean, it's.
But a gun pointed at the head.
Well, it's First Amendment for them, right?
But I thought in the video that I saw it was a plastic gun. That doesn't matter.
I'm good. How are you?
Nice to see you.
All right. Now, like I said, what I'm trying to say is we're going to talk to you for some time before we have you play. So if you want to leave the guitar, you want to, it doesn't matter. But we need you closer to that microphone.
It's
is my
like
point.
Sucking your thumb, you know, it's nice to have it nearby.
The only thing that's preventing is you being heard. So that microphone is very
being hurt.
Heard.
But,
yeah, you're going to get hurt.
Well, you know, you don't look a bit like Howard Stern.
Did you think you were going to be on the Howard Stern show?
No.
That's right. He's going to go to, yeah, going to be on that Howard guy's show on Sirius XM.
Can you hear me?
Not really, but he, what's that? We're getting a, my producer saying, what's that, Kyle? No, I know. What I'm trying to suggest is you put the guitar down so that you can get really close. And then when you sing, we'll get you mic'd differently. Thank you.
What you're strongly suggesting.
I don't know how many other ways I could say you need to get this close to the microphone.
Yeah, these microphones, you really have to work them hard. This is an ongoing theme with our show. I know it's becoming quite tedious, but we're going to get new mics.
Did you Purell the pop filter?
we oh, probably right. should.
Yeah,
we,
oh, right. Never thought of that.
You never know where these things have been.
No, exactly. Some of the characters that have been through here, you're right. You're right.
You know, right. Normally we have like a big buildup and a huge introduction, and then it all becomes clear. But all I can say is what a pleasure to welcome to these studios somebody that everyone listening across Canada and mostly around the States would have heard about. Murray McLaughlin, everybody. Woo! Murray, how about... Phil's going to Purell the pop.
He's Purelling the pop filter? Okay.
You know, recently, I don't know if this is a place to start with you, but recently we had someone very close to you on this show.
My wife, Denise Donlan, yeah, she has a book out. And really fabulous book, actually.
And I got to tell you, we had a wonderful discussion with her, and I hope she had enjoyed it, too. She seemed to. We had her on forever.
My dear mother once advised me, in the very few times she ever gave me any advice, to marry a woman who was way smarter than me.
Yeah.
And I got really lucky and did just that.
Yeah, she's a very, very nice but super-de-duper smarty pants.
She's a very, very capable woman, and she's a terrific role. But the thing to remember is, you know, you have to ask yourself, how good a husband am I?
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm the guy that I just finished, you know, 13 concerts, and I sold her book on my merch table.
Good
wow,
for you.
Wow, good boy.
So there.
You know, no matter who you are or what you are, you're always like, well, I can maybe score some points with the missus.
Well, there is a good sales incentive because, as you know, the book is called Fearless as Possible Under the Circumstances, and I signed the signature page for authors right next to her signature, fearful as possible.
Now, when you're Murray McLaughlin and you're married to Denise Donlan, you're like this super high-powered couple. Are you still? Do you still get a list on the weekends? Hey, Murray, if you get a chance, can you fix that? Can you go to the depot and fix that washer in the tub or something?
Not only do I do that, I actually enjoy it. I'm the guy who can actually turn a wrench and keep the boats running.
Nice.
Yeah, and Denise is the kind of person who still, she doesn't get excited until it's 80% off, and she buys roasts on the day before the expiry date. She's very thrifty.
Wow.
Really?
So, yeah. So, you know, we spend our dough on doing stuff that's life-enhancing, you might say. Like, you know, going and living in Italy for 3 months and finding every good wine in Tuscany.
Wow. Well, it's nice to be able to do that.
It is, yeah. Well, that was, you know, it was my idea. She would have just worked through the whole thing, but I wanted to take a little break and get out of Canada and learn Italian. Vorrei una chitarra economica, per favore.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
And honestly, I haven't seen you in a long time, and I didn't know what to expect for a man 68, approaching 69, if I got my math right. You look great, man.
Well, you know, it takes, as Ronnie Hawkins says, it takes an awful lot of effort to look this bad.
But you know, all the years you've been in this lifestyle of touring and making music, and we're looking at Murray's 19th studio album, as I mentioned at the start. Was it different when you were younger, when you first started out on the road? Were you, like a lot of young musicians, sort of, you know, hell-bent on seeing how much you could ingest and abuse?
At 19, I knew nothing, was full of existential anger, really couldn't play all that well yet, was desperately trying to write stuff that was like horribly, horribly, horribly earnest for the most part, but sometimes worked. And now I'm very comfortable with who it is that I am, and I've spent a lot of time learning to do what I do, and I'm very comfortable doing what I do.
Yeah.
And, you know, I feel that, you know, the work that I do now is probably the best that I've ever been able to do, and it seems to continue getting better all of the time, at least by my standards. So,
when did the comfort kick in? Like in your 40s, 50s, 60s?
Have you ever had a dog?
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you get it when it's a little puppy,
yeah,
it's all paws.
Yeah.
And eventually, like, the dog gets bigger and the paws stay the same size. And they call it growing into your paws.
Right.
And people are like that.
Yeah.
Eventually, you stop casting some idealized image of what it is you're supposed to live up to or be in front of you and trying to move into that, which is very difficult and oftentimes something you fail at.
And takes a lot of energy.
And eventually, you get very comfortable with who it is that you are.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't it interesting in those years, sort of 19 to 30, in a musician's life, and a lot of artists as well, in that time period, you know, you, even though you say, yeah, you were young and earnest and, you know, putting out this ideological, you know, version of your, the way you see the world, you know, like a lot of 19-year-old people, they're like, oh, I'm pretty sure. I have a 19-year-old daughter who's the surest person I've ever met. She's sure she knows everything, and I know nothing. But I was going to say, in that period between 19 and 30, you can also, you put out a lot of pretty good songs, like a lot of artists. So it might be, you might have been new at the craft, but you'd put out some pretty good things.
Well, the great thing, like when we were working, Bernie Finkelstein and Graham Stairs and I, on doing a compilation for a big double CD that True North put out, it was a Lifetime kind of compilation. So I was going through all of the songs, you know, from Child Song, which was basically the first song I ever wrote, all the way up to, you know, modern times. And even though I say those things about that kid, you know, that 19 or 20 year old kid, I still fundamentally like who he was.
Mm-hmm.
And like my old buddy Bart Scholes used to say, I mean, he was a very eloquent person. He did all the cover art for the early True North records.
Mm-hmm.
And Bart used to say, you know, the purpose of life is to not be somebody when you're 80 that you would have hated when you were 15. So, you know, mm-hmm. you get the perspective from both sides. I mean, I still, that ideological kid still is still in here.
I guess you're just more comfortable in how you know now how to express the ideology versus when you're a kid, you're just sort of stumbling around. But again, you put out some pretty good music in those years.
Yeah, and also the point of the exercise for me is reinvention. You know, the mid-period in an artist's career that you talked about is a time when oftentimes people will feel the most pressure to do what's expected of them, while the desire to do something new and reinvent themselves is pressing on them from the other side. So, you know, it's people do interesting things during that period. Like, you know, Nora Jones, for instance, who made like those, you know, couple of really seminal, beautiful, tight, little, wildly acoustic, gorgeous albums that nobody'd heard the mm-hmm. like of in years. And then suddenly she went off and wrote a lot of songs with her boyfriend and made this weird kind of bluesy rock album that nobody liked very much.
Mm-hmm. You, so in the early 70s, you were in Toronto, right? Part of that music culture in Toronto, were you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, sure.
And it was quite a time, wasn't it? Were you hobnobbing with the likes of Neil Young, and you mentioned Ronnie Hawkins? It was,
well, I not only hobnob with Neil, I did the Tonight's the Night tour with him from Boston to Berkeley.
Wow.
I was the human sacrifice between Nils Lofgren and Grin and Neil. And that was the era of Quaaludes and wine.
There you go. Now we're getting to it.
Yeah, there were, you know, it was an odd sort of tour because Neil had written all these really dark songs about a guy and his entourage who had overdosed.
Right.
And the tour was really orphaned by his management. Mm-hmm. Neil wanted to do small halls, which meant, you know, 6,000 people in Boston Symphony Hall. He didn't want to do arenas. So, you know, I went and did a guest thing with him while he was up in Canada. He had a sort of a warm-up concert at one of the universities. So we were hanging out, and I played, and I think I had just finished the album with Down by the Henry Moore on it.
Mm-hmm.
So we were kind of doing all right. And Neil kind of went, oh, and said, well, why don't you come on the rest of the tour? So it was really an eye-opener. It truly was. As I mentioned, the Quaaludes and wine, like having 6,000 hostile, really stoned-out college kids screaming at you in a most profane fashion to get the F off the stage was really an experience.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, singing goodbye mm-hmm. mama, goodbye papa to a rock and roll crowd.
Mm-hmm.
When you started off in the scene here in Toronto in the late 60s and early 70s, so Neil Young's around, and who are some of the other contemporaries that you look back at that period and think, wow, man, I was making music with some pretty...
Well, I think probably the most... for me, the little microcosm, I mean, obviously there were a lot of people who were being tremendously successful around, but my little microcosm, you know, my cocoon of creativity was really what Bernie Finkelstein created at True North Records. And I was on the label, Bruce Coburn was on the label, Luke Gibson was on the label, the early band Syrinx, the first sort of Moog synthesizer band, eventually Carol Pope. Dan Hill, you know, there are all these. And what Bernie did was to create this little place where you could just stretch out and make what kind of music that you wanted without feeling any sort of pressure to fit it into some economic model. So the result was there was a real burst of interesting, different creative music that came out of that label at that time.
You know, you mentioned, too, Ronnie Hawkins. He's really held in high regard by the community, isn't he? Even to this day.
Well, Ronnie's a great character.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah. I've had the pleasure of being in his house a couple of times in recent history. And to sit... You've been up there in Stony Lake? And
sure.
Ever,
I mean, I...
And sit in that room.
He's a little more infirm now, but it was a regular occurrence to run into Ronnie at the Stony Lake Market.
Yeah. Right.
Actually, when the Australian journalist who just passed away, I've forgotten his name off the top of my head, but... He was there with Ronnie when they did the John Lennon and Yoko residency.
Mm-hmm. In Mississauga.
Yeah. So they would show up at the market regularly and, hiya, how do you do? I first met Ronnie actually at Gordon Lightfoot's house when he walked in the front door and said something highly insulting to my first wife.
Well, that's him.
You know, in that last couple of minutes you mentioned, you know, Gordy Lightfoot, Bruce Coburn, Neil Young, Murray McLaughlin. It's an interesting group of sort of singer-songwriters. You know, Neil's electric aside, there's a real... What is it about us that we produce that type of singer-songwriter?
It's interesting. I just wrote an essay for a project. It's kind of 150th anniversary of Canada project for it around the Juno Awards. And what I pointed out was when Bruce and I toured Japan in the 1970s, we went there, and I'd never been there before. I didn't read Shogun on purpose, all of it, you know. But Japan was a real eye-opening experience for me because there was a huge fan club base for Canadian music.
Yeah.
And when I talked to Japanese college kids about it, they really drew a very clear distinction between music that came out of Canada and music that came out of the United States or out of the UK, for that matter. And kind of boiling it down to its essence, what they were really saying was that our singer-songwriters are to Canada kind of what poets are to Russia. There's a real kind of there's a feeling. The way I put it is there's a wind that blows through us.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody's got like a little bit of the breath of that wind in them. It's, you know, we live in a country that, in which we exist at its discretion. We, you know, we've never conquered Canada. We're ticks on the ass end of Canada. You know, whatever it decides to do to us, it will.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's a kind of a feeling here that, you know, you can fall off the edge of the country. You really can and disappear. We're different in that respect. And I think, you know, there is that. There are classic lines in Canadian songs that you can think of that are really, to my mind, intellectually, ideologically, really, really Canadian-like.
And completely
Leonard's
different.
There's
then.
A crack in everything, yeah. Where the light comes through. Or Joni's, you know, I wish I had a river I could skate away on. Or, you know, mm-hmm. These, they're just wonderful.
Bruce Coburn, what's that line you love from, I love it too, from...
I know, it was la, 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 la.
No. The Bruce Coburn song, Kick of the Darkness.
Till it bleeds daylight.
Yeah, that's a good... I'm sorry, I was just screwing with you.
No, okay. That's fine. No,
you can screw with us all you want. Was American Success...
I was hoping Bruce was actually listening there.
Yeah, we're just hoping anyone's listening at this point, Murray.
Is Bruce still in the area? Do you know?
Bruce lives in San Francisco.
Oh.
I haven't seen him in quite a long time, but Bernie still manages him. And Bruce is a new father, actually. He found a lovely lady, apparently, and decided to become a father in his 70s.
Good for him.
So he's
I know.
His preoccupation now is taking his toddler to school. I mean, that's
good
kind
for
of
him.
The deal.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and a lot of I ran into somebody last night who's younger than that, 52 years old, who's got a 2-year-old, And we were talking, because I find it fascinating. My kids are 19 and 22, and I'm like, what is that? What is that going back in time? You know, because he's got like the 22-year-old, and now he's got a 2-year-old. But what I wanted to focus on a little bit before I forget is that idea of, you know, a uniquely Canadian style of music. And it continues today with a guy like Ronnie Sexsmith. You know, someone that people that are... And Leonard Cohen, you mentioned, there's a whole sort of pantheon of Canadian singer-songwriters of a certain style.
There's some coming up that I think you should really keep your eye on, too. I mean, Tom Wilson, you know, Junk House and Blackie and the Roto Kings is a really amazing guy. He's a tremendous character, and he's a great artist. But his son, like his boy, who's just coming up, I just did 3 dates with... I just went out and did it for fun, like to play with Blackie and the Rodeo Kings. We did the Jack Singer and the Windspear and one other place.
Out in Calgary.
And yeah, and his son, Thomas, was opening the show. And he just blew me away. He's like a 25-year-old guy, tall, you know, good-looking kid, but he's a really great songwriter. And he uses his voice in a way I've never heard anybody do before. Like he's almost like in between his lines and phrases, he's singing lead guitar solos. He gets out there in front of like thousands of people with just an acoustic guitar, and you can hear a pin drop.
What's his name? Thomas Wilson?
Thomas Wilson, yeah.
All right.
Now, that's the type of music that probably wouldn't get music airplay.
Not at the current fashion is against that trend, yeah.
Right. So how does a guy like that build a career? By doing that?
The same way I maintain one. You go out and play.
Yeah. And you're
if persons such as myself, or even, you know, Leonard Cohen for that matter, didn't go out and perform concerts, they would disappear over the edge of the horizon, because your base is really with your fans and the people that are going to stay with what it is that you do. There is no help to be present company accepted, of course, but in the general sense, the old model where you put out a record, it gets played in radio, the record company promotes it, you go out and tour and blah blah blah,
it's all gone, completely.
that little runt called Napster took care of that,
right?
And now into Spotify it continues.
Yeah, you get 52 trillion hits and you make $1.47.
No.
What's funny? It's tragic, isn't it, when you think about it?
Well, you know, it's also interesting from my perspective. Like, music happens, in a sense, the way it always did, by kind of odd personal context. Like, I've just had a song recorded by this huge rock and roll band in the United States, which tickled me pink. It's, you know, I mean, I just got my first royalty check from BMG, and I went, thank you, Jesus.
Thank you.
It's a band called Widespread Panic, but it came about in this really weird way. Eddie Schwartz, the guy who wrote Hit Me With Your Best Shot, calls me up from Nashville. He says, there's this guy in L.A. who wants to get in touch with you. Is it okay if I give him your coordinates? Yes, of course. It turned out to be this guy named John Reese Eddins. The name kind of rang a bell. Got in touch with him. Turned out we had a mutual friend. He was the guy that produced the first album for Warren Zevon.
Wow.
He was part of that whole Waddy Wattel, Jackson Browne, California Mafia crowd, right? And now he had a kind of... He was retired. He had this kind of grungy old guy band, and they played in clubs around L.A., and they were doing my song, Hockey Red. But he didn't know it was my song. So his son, it turns out, is the bass player in this band called Widespread Panic. His son heard the song, said, well, I really like that song. You know, we might take it to the band. Who wrote it? I don't know. So some research was done. They found the guitar player that used to work with Tom Rush, Trevor Veach, who's doing film and TV in L.A., and said, and they thought it was his song. So they got in touch with Trevor. He said, no, no, this guy in Canada wrote it. So finally they got in touch with me. The next thing I know, Widespread Panic is doing this song in concerts, and like 20,000 people are standing up in a stadium every time the big line comes up and throwing their hands in the air and screaming, I don't give a good goddamn. So no, it was a
what's the name of the song, Murray?
It was Honky Red.
Honky Red or
Honky? Yeah, it's a notorious song. It was actually cut by Waylon Jennings, and all kinds of people did it, but nobody would ever put it on the record because it had blasphemy.
Blasphemous.
It was blasphemous.
What, speaking of being covered, you know, like another guy that has been on our show and a friend of mine is Tom Cochran. And, when whoever that, I mean, Life is a Highway made, sold tons, but then who was the...
Rascal Flatts.
When Rascal Flatts, as he calls it, looks like it's the song that they... The place in Austin was paid for by the royalties from Rascal Flatts. Yeah. What's the biggest cover of yours? What would it have been?
It might be this one.
This one?
Yeah.
Okay.
But, I mean, certainly the one that was the biggest for me as far as a career establishing thing, the one that really stands out was two songs were covered early on by Tom Rush on his first Columbia album. He was
wow.
For those who don't know, he was a really huge star in the kind of folk. And he was a guy who was known for discovering singer-songwriters. He was the first guy to record James Taylor, Joni Mitchell, and Jackson
wow.
Brown. So to be recorded by Tom was really, really something. That was big.
You know, you've been friends, you know, thinking about all the people that we've talked about so far. And you toured with Bruce Coburn. You know, obviously a contemporary of all those people you just mentioned, whether it's James Taylor or Jackson Brown. Do you ever have this happen to you when you're listening to somebody else? Maybe it's a friend like Bruce or somebody you've, you know, an acquaintance like Jackson Brown, and you hear their song and you think, oh, man, why didn't I think of that phrase? Or why, you know, do you ever hear a song and go, damn, I wish I would have written it?
If I've ever felt that way, it would be farther back in the songwriter's lexicon, probably going back to the golden age of, you know, Sammy Kahn and Cole Porter folks like that. Because the style in which I work is really, in fact, the style in which Gordon Lightfoot or Bruce Coburn or Joni Mitchell or me work, they're all really radically different. They all have very different takes. And, like, they're so dissimilar in, you know, musical conception and also in philosophical conception in some cases that, you know, I mean, there's plenty of room for everybody. I guess that's what I'm getting at. There's plenty of room for everybody's style.
Yeah.
What about today? You mentioned the one kid, but do you ever listen to the radio? Do you hear Canadian artists currently that you're impressed with or unimpressed? Like, even as far as, like, Drake goes, Justin Bieber. I mean, these are the Canadians now that are the most notable.
Yeah, that's the pop music of the day.
What do you think of that? Do you think that's good music, bad music, or just today's music?
You know, I mean, I don't have my pants stuck up around my chest.
Uh-huh.
And but
when do we all do that, by the way? I've got no ass left. So is that coming for me where I got to have my waistline's going to be at my sternum?
The sad truth is yes.
Yeah, it's coming. It's coming. Oh, I know.
But, you know, the thing is, it's like, yeah, you have your musical bags, and it's not really a prejudice against what's popular. In fact, it's really insulting to diss what's popular, because mm-hmm. what you're really doing ultimately is dissing the people that like it.
Right.
You know, and like, I'm not going to sit there and like call a bunch of people idiots because they love Justin Bieber or because they love Drake. However, my prejudice, and I find that it's true of a lot of the younger music people that I run into, my prejudice is I love the clear evidence that somebody can actually play.
Mm-hmm.
You mean as in terms of their chops, their ability? Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the records that are made are kind of like heavily auto-tuned soundscapes.
Like, sure.
They're put together electronically. They're put together as soundscape tracks, and then kind of a song is drifted into it in some way. They're mashups. They're, you know, it's
created beyond
you
their...
You know, by the same token, I mean, there's a band out of Paris...
Mm-hmm.
called Caravan Palace that's really, really, really new. But their mashup is to take, like, Paris hot club swing music mm-hmm. and mash it up with electro pop and these, like, really... I mean, they've started a dance craze out of Paris, which is loosely based on the Charleston. It's like swing dancing.
Amazing.
And it is the wildest thing you've ever seen. I love it. My 26-year-old son turned me on to them.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny you said that about soundscapes. And, you know, my daughter's... One of my daughter's favorites is Drake. And you know, when we were younger, you know, you'd listen to a Murray McLaughlin song or one of your fans, and you'd see somebody playing music...
Mm-hmm.
My kids don't care, or this one especially doesn't care, whether Drake can play a lick of an mm-hmm. instrument or not. Just enjoys the sound. And, you know, they're popular for a reason. He's writing some good hooks.
Yep.
But when it's a different experience live than if I come and see,
sure.
you know, you guys play, because you're really playing those instruments.
There's only one thing I kind of find myself wishing about the current, you know, kind of reality television juiced music culture such as it is that... You know, I just wish they'd spend their money on better stuff than Bugatti Veyrons and throwing it around like bullshit.
I'm not sure what a Bugatti... Is that a car?
It's a really stupid, expensive car that's useless.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really, really effing vulgar. And, you know, there's so much shit, better shit you could be doing with your money than what those people are doing with it, and they should be ashamed of themselves. That's all. That's what I got to say about the music scene.
Okay.
So what if you would have made tons and tons of money? What, you would have spent it differently?
I'd keep some and spend most of it doing something like, you know, Warren Buffett does. He puts 95 or maybe more percent of what he makes back into Bill Gates. Everybody's doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. They're throwing it back into trying to resurrect Africa, establish satellite communication system, give everybody Wi-Fi, give everybody medical, build roads, schools, you know.
For the good
people.
Of all, I suppose.
Yeah, help
yeah.
people. Mm-hmm. I'm all over that.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask a question. We're going to take a break in a couple seconds here along SiriusXM. The voice in our studio today is Murray McLaughlin, who has been making pretty great music for a pretty long time. You talked about the 19-year-old you, the ideology of youth, and you're wide-eyed, and you actually said something I thought was interesting about you feel more comfortable in all aspects of an artist's life, but also are you as good a player as you are you a better player now than you were at 19?
Very
you just
much.
Know more.
Yeah, very much so. In fact,
do you play every day?
Yeah, pretty much.
Like you on off days, you get that guitar and you're screwing around with it.
Remember, you were asking about like the inevitability of your pants getting
my pants are coming up. Yes.
Well, there's another inevitability that, you know, when you get to be 68, as I am pushing 69, you have to be very, very careful to keep your mm-hmm. body parts in shape so they work. I mean, I have incipient arthritis in a couple of my fingers, and it's harder to make a C chord than it was. I actually have to warm up. I have to keep playing so I can play. And so, yeah,
that
I do practice
sense.
Every day.
Now, that does make sense, especially because you're going to go out and tour. I guess you're doing some shows for this 19th studio album called Love Can't Tell Time.
Yeah.
And but I was thinking more about the interest of somebody that's played their whole lives, and that guitar is usually somewhere in your house. And you go to it every day, not just, as you say, as a soother, but also something you need to do to keep these fingers limber.
There was a real sea change that I went through just around the time that Denise and I went to live in Italy. And it was rediscovering that what I really like to do the most, what I love to do the most, is to play music. And during that period of time, I bought a cheap guitar in Italy, and I'd sit out in this little veranda we had overlooking the Arno, and I'd just sit there in the morning, and I'd just play guitar. Like, half the time, I had my ear on it. And I just really fell in love with the way it sounded again. And I was in the middle of learning a new kind of language on the guitar at the time, so that was sort of exciting, too.
A different picking style, or...
Well, I could demonstrate.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't know if people would hear it or not.
Fuck, I love the shit. Here, let me make sure that... Just make sure that mic... Okay, that's the mic. So give me an example of what you're talking about.
Well, you know, like a folk kind of chord, you know. You got those old folk chords where you got, you know, rock stuff. But the stuff I'm learning was more like...
My favorite. Those jazz chords?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I love that. How long ago was this Italy trip?
2013.
So you think about it. All the years you've been playing, and even a guy at your level can start to fool around with an instrument you've been playing since you were a kid and still go, oh, there's something new in this, that yeah. Something that would have caught your attention.
Well, that process, I don't believe that process should ever stop. You know, I find that, you know, learning or making music is the same really as painting or a lot of other experiences that I'd classify as existential. You know, they're the ones that shut up the chatter that's in your head all the time. You understand what I mean?
Oh, I do. The monkey brain.
Yeah, well, I often riff on this on stage that, you know, like there's two people in us. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the kind of idealized, polish it up and shove it out in the world self that you hope people will accept as who you are. And then there's the person that you know you are, you hope people don't find out
yeah.
about.
Yeah, the one that we spend all day hoping no one actually sees.
Yeah, so you're kind of sitting there all the time having this inner dialogue between these two parts of yourself, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not really quite as simple as what kind of cereal you're going to have in
no,
the morning.
No, exactly.
But, you know, it's a fun place from which to work. You know, for me, reinvention, learning... These things, all the things I've been involved in, whether it's painting or karate or flying airplanes, have been things that sort of still that inner dialogue. And a quiet place in your head is a really good place to be for periods of time.
When you went to Italy and you're there for 3 months, you're in Tuscany. I've been there too. Your head's in a completely different space.
Oh, yeah.
Did you create? Does that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Open doors that
absolutely.
You don't get by being in the middle of the city of Toronto?
Well, I think I love being in Toronto. I mean, it's it's my hometown. I emigrated here when I was a small child, and I grew up here. I could be a cab driver here. I know every alley. but, you know, it's. I think it's important. You know, you see this in the United States, that you talk to that an average person in the United States, and they don't know shit about the world.
They've been outside of the state that they live in.
Nor do they get any information that's not filtered through their own media, which is very America-centric.
Yes.
So I think if you're going to be a person who has the right to have an opinion, then you have to broaden your experience enough to actually merit having one. Mm-hmm. And I find it's very important to get out of this country from time to time, just to kind of get a good look at the life experience of being here and how other people live. I really wanted to actually learn how to get groceries and do the laundry and actually converse with people in some respectful way in Italian, which I did. Mm-hmm. And that was really a great thing.
You know, those comparisons, we were talking about that this morning, like Beauty and the Beast in Malaysia. They're not going to show it in the theaters because there's a gay scene.
Yeah.
And it just, and we make, making that point, sometimes you got to look out at that kind of stuff and appreciate what we have here.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that kind of thing, everybody goes tut tut Malaysia, but that kind of thing is always just sitting under the surface we live.
Mm-hmm. And believe me, there's, a lot of North Americans are, I call it pretend tolerance. Murray McLaughlin's here with us for a little longer. It's Humble and Fred Radio live this morning around North America on Sirius XM. You can download this episode later if you like, if you missed any parts. Murray's going to play something from his 19th studio album in a second or two. Come on back. It's Humble and Fred Radio. Did you see them on a
promenade? Hey guys, this is Mae Martin. You're listening to Canada Laughs on Sirius XM.
I'm the luckiest guy since I met you. Since you found it in your heart to say I do. Some guys might think they got it made, caught up in the social world. I know I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I'm the luckiest guy, and that's a fact. One look at you convinced me I could not turn back. You'd stand right out in any crowd of Thoroughbred City girls. I know I'm the luckiest guy in the world.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Humble and Fred Radio around North America on Sirius XM. Murray McLaughlin from Love Can't Tell Time. There's a little sample of something called The Luckiest Guy. And we're pretty lucky to have Murray McLaughlin in the 5-Hour Energy Studios. Frederick?
Yes, the 5-Hour Energy Studios. 5-Hour Energy, small bottle, big results. You know that. Comes in a multitude of flavors. Gives you the boost you need to get through a... You're strong. Quick, simple, effective, fast, and easy to consume. Zero sugar, only 4 calories. 5-Hour Energy. Yes, a little tiny small bottle, but you get big results.
Well, during the break there, talking to Murray about flying airplanes, I was got my license in 2004, and I flew pretty regularly. I think about 700 hours until about 2008 or 9, and then I got divorced, and
Sold the airplane.
Stopped flying as much because one of those forces that acts on flight is money, as you know. Oh. And how about you? Are you still current, or have you put it aside?
No, I don't fly anymore. I wrapped that up after I had a very unfortunate medical incident where some well-meaning doctors attempted to kill me.
Ah.
The result was that I had to have open heart surgery to repair what they had done, and lost my medical at that point in time. It took several years to get it back. By that point, all my ratings had lapsed, and I was very rusty.
Because people often ask me, because I haven't been PIC of an airplane in a couple of years, and they say, well, you know, do you have to start all over again? I said, no, as soon as your medical's current, at our age, it's every 2 years. Within a few hours, you can sort of get it back. But it's a very disposable skill. It's like you were talking about playing guitar every day. When I was flying 3-4 times a week, I was very, very responsive to the aircraft. Now I could get in it, and I would be like a little bit clunky. And
well, before this, you know, I was certainly experienced and current enough before this incident happened that, you know, I could easily single pilot through very bad weather without looking out the window a complex multi-engine aircraft while talking to air traffic control and writing shit on my knee pad.
Yeah.
It, you know, was not a problem. After the surgery, I didn't feel that I could multitask quite as well as I did before. It's just one of those things that happens.
Quickly, what happened? What did the doctors do?
I had to submit to a test procedure called an angiogram to see whether or not I had, atherosclerosis, I think they call it. I didn't have any worse than anybody else my age would have, but there had been a change in the ECG reading that the aviation medical examiner found, and they wouldn't sign me off to fly unless I submitted to the test. So I had this test, and while undergoing the test, it's a catheterization where they thread basically a wire up from your femoral artery into your heart, release a bunch of dye, and take pictures. They tore my coronary artery.
Jesus.
So it's one of those scenes where, you know, if I'd gotten the cab to go home, which I really wanted to do, I would have died in the cab on the way home.
Well, on that note...
and that ended your flying career.
Well, it would have it would have cut short a few albums anyway.
So Murray McLaughlin, Ian Thomas, Mark Jordan... And please remind me, I always forget her name.
Cindy Church.
And many years ago, I decided, how did that come about? You called the project Lunch at Allen's.
It actually happened because of the story about the surgery. That happened just before Christmas. And when I was recovering in the hospital, at this point, whacked out of my brains on morphine and blowing the little ball up the tube, Ian and Tom Cochran and Mark showed up at the hospital to sing me Christmas carols. So they turned the whole ward into a Frank Capra movie. Filipino nurses with Santa hats leaning in the door and smiling the whole nine yards. And I'm sitting there on the bed just bawling my eyes out because I was really just moved at my friends would humiliate themselves to that extent on my behalf. So anyway, I wanted to have a kind of a gratitude lunch when I got out and got back on my feet. I did the Everly Brothers tour at Massey and National Arts Center in Hamilton Place, and then called a lunch, invited Ian to come to lunch and Tom, which they did. We met at Allen's restaurant on the Danforth, and lunch kind of turned into dinner, and everybody on the planet stopped by. I mean, at one point it was like Cochran and Ian and Mark and Jim Cuddy and Greg Keeler and a cast of thousands. We were all just snockered, and at one point I put my arm lovingly around Ian and said, you know, we have to do something together again. and the opportunity came up. An agent called me up and asked if I would take part in a songwriters on stage. They had a chain of six theaters that wanted to do this thing. I hate those things. I really do, because it's like the old actor's joke, you know, bullshit, 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 my song.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, who do I have to do it with? And they said, anybody you want. Aha, said I, and I called up Ian and said, listen, you've been locked in a studio doing film and TV for the last 15 years. Do you want to come out and play? And he sort of said, yeah, okay, sure, why not? And then we thought, who else can we get? He thought of Mark, so we called up Mark. Mark said no, and then he sort of hemmed and hawed, and I said, listen, will you go on the road if I actually make a cast of your wife's breast that you can sleep on at night? Then he said yes.
That's a handy skill.
Yeah, he said yes. So then we were casting about for another person to take part in the thing, and I thought of Shirley Eckhart because she'd had that monster hit, and she's a wonderful gal. She had the hit with Bonnie Raitt, Let's Give Him Something to Talk About.
Mm-hmm.
But Shirley, by this point, I mean, she owned that song, Lock, Stock, and Barrel, all of it, publishing the whole deal. So she was happily living up in the Ottawa Valley with her dogs and her friend and, you know, basically rolling around in her money at night like Scrooge McDuck. So she didn't really want to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And then Ian suggested Cindy Church. And I thought, oh, yeah, my God, yeah. I remember her from the Great Western Orchestra and Quartet and these different bands. I said, she's terrific. So we called her up, and she said, sure. And ultimately, she's kind of the vocal glue that really blends the band together so beautifully. And they're all grown-up people. They're all wonderful people to work with. I love them all. They're like, you know... There's that saying, your friends are the family you choose. Well, they are.
Yeah. And how long did that last? Because when I'm trying to think the year that I worked with you and Ian, at that point it was just, I think it was 2007, maybe 8. But at that point when we worked together in Moose Jaw, there was, I think it was just you and Ian on stage. So did you go out in various incarnations of Lunch at Allen's?
No, Ian and I did that because we both were authors. we got invited by Gary Hyland, now passed away, to do it, because we both had books. And we just went out for a lark, really.
Okay.
In fact, we played hooky from that event to go up the road to the theater and see Ratatouille.
That's great.
The Lunch at Alice thing, it's ongoing. I mean, we never expected it to really last a long time, but we've just done, I think it's our sixth album. It's just about to be released. It's called If It Feels Right. And, you know, for me, the most beautiful song on it is one of Mark's songs. It's just gorgeous. You know, you remember you were asking, is there something you wish you'd actually written? Maybe that's it. It's this beautiful song he wrote about lying on the dock with his kids looking at the stars and thinking about the past when human beings explored, and thinking about maybe his kids kind of cartwheeling through the universe. And it's called We All Come From Away. It's a beautiful song.
You know, he has a song. A couple of years ago, I was working with Kim Stockwood, and he came in on the radio show I was on.
There's a co-write on my record with Kim.
With Kimmy?
Yeah.
Oh, she's something else.
So, you know.
So Murray comes in, and he does an acoustic version of a Christmas song he had just written. This is probably 6 years ago. I think about you every time it snows. Have you ever?
Honestly,
it's
every time it's Christmas.
I just love it. It's funny because it's not that well known, and I wish it were, because it's one of the best wintry Christmas sort of.
I don't mind saying that Zuzu's Petals is the best goddamn Christmas album that's ever been made. It's also mostly totally original music. We wrote it. It's all secular Christmas songs. And we had a ball.
And it was you and Mark and...
Yeah, me, Mark, Ian, and Cindy.
Wow.
Cindy.
How about something from Love Can't Tell Time, Murray's album, which is available where people get music, wherever that is.
That's a feature on iTunes.
It's on Spotify. I'm looking at it right now.
Right on.
And what are we going to hear?
Let me turn that mic on for you, sir.
Do you need phones? You want to put phones on for this at all?
Okay.
You're fine.
I can hear myself fine. People in their prime can hit the sack and still be active. Contrary to most thinking man, they often are attractive. Maybe not to callow boys or shallow little girls who've yet to learn it's time and wear puts luster on the pearl. Love can come anytime. At 17 or 99, while your heart's still beating and the sun keeps shining, love just can't tell time. Look at that moon smiling while it shines. Ain't changed much since you were 29, and you're still just a sucker for that same old line. Love just can't tell time. Love's a risky business. You're old enough to know it. Not many ways to make it work, and a lot of ways to blow it. You think the book of love is closed, chapter, verse, and letter. Then love comes sneaking up on you. You'd have thought that you'd know better. Risky business. You're old enough to know it. Not many ways to make it work, and a lot of ways to blow it. You think the book of love is closed, chapter, verse, and letter. Then love comes sneaking up on you. You'd have thought that you'd know better. But just look at that moon. Baby, it sure looks fine. Just like it did
in days of Auld Lang Syne, and you're still just a sucker for that same old line. Love just can't tell time. Love just can't tell time.
That is so nice. That's crazy, man. Oh, I love that.
Mm-hmm. That's the what I mean meant by the new guitar languages.
Yeah, I see it. Well, I was going to say that's the Italian music there. It's amazing to watch you play that and just how easy all that comes to you. What in that particular case, what happened first, the lyrics or the music, the run that you just did there?
Well, that song I wrote, it's a co-write with a really dear friend of mine who passed away, unfortunately, before I finished the record, named Allison Gordon. And Allison had, you know, late in her life, she was in her 60s at this point, suddenly found herself the other woman in a love triangle. And she was just tickled pink. She had a tattoo on her backside. It was a heart that said, "Your name here." She was quite a character. Allison was the first woman sports writer.
I was going to say, yeah. Allison Gordon, the sports writer,
on the Blue Jays circuit following the baseball team.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's a very colorful gal, and she was a great friend. So we wrote that song together because, you know, her feeling was, you know, love doesn't just happen when you're, you know, Romeo and Juliet. It can happen in a Chartwell residence, and it often does. So, you know, keep an eye on mom and dad, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Murray McLaughlin, it's interesting. We have this another release, Lunch at Allen's. Do you have an appetite to go out and play still?
I have just finished 8 of my own concerts. I've just finished 3 with Blackie and the Rodeo Kings for fun. I've got 19 concerts coming up with Lunch at Allen's before the end of October, and then 10 more of my own in November. So, yeah, I'm kind of out there. And they're all nice theaters with good pianos and good tech, and nice. People show up. Hallelujah.
And how far will you go?
Coast to coast, actually. The last of the Lunch at Allen's dates are all the theaters out in eastern Canada. You know, the Rebecca Cohen, the Fredericton Playhouse, that bunch. And then out west, Lunch at Allen's, 10 dates, it'll be, you know, the McPherson Playhouse in Victoria and that.
But nice soft seat theaters.
Oh, yeah. Really,
but
lovely.
It's March now, so you're not going to tour this record right away or just going to let it go out there?
Well, I have. As I said, I've just done a bunch
8
of
shows.
Concerts. Yeah, the Centerpoint Theater and the Grand and the Really Opera House and the Showplace in Peterborough. Did a bunch of concerts, and I will do, like, you know, again, more concerts in November, but first comes Lunch at Allen's. And I'm doing a lot of, you know, kind of out and playing for folks such as yourself, just to let people know it's there.
Do you have a relationship at all with Gord Downie?
I've met him. I don't really know him. Mm-hmm. No, not specifically. My wife knows him better because, you know, she's been more in the rock and roll scene over the years. I'm very aware of what's going on.
No, you mentioned
Allison
Gordon, and I just thought, you know, what he's going through now, whether you had any type of relationship with him and where that's at.
No, it's interesting what he is going through. I mean, I've been involved. I'm on the board of directors of an organization called Room 217 Foundation, and it was specifically founded to assist and create music therapy training and programs for palliative care situations. Mm-hmm. Right now, actually, we have a new program called Pathways, which is a singing program. It's meant to go into, you know, respite centers, places where people are in for Alzheimer's and dementia. And I'm actually putting together a benefit concert. It's put together. It's like Margaret Atwood, Ben Heppner, Natalie McMaster and Danelle Leahy, Matt Anderson, myself, I'm going to play. Albert Schultz from Soul Pepper Theater is going to sing Sinatra. You know? Mm-hmm. And it's going to be at the Glenn Gould Theater in Toronto on May the 5th. It's a big deal. Actually, if folks are interested in it, they could go to voicesthatcare.com, right?
And we'll put that up on our we'll put that up on our social
That's
media.
The ticket thing. Yeah.
You know, Fred during the break asked about the farmer song, which is, you know, we played a little bit the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go out on a bunch of touring where you're just doing Murray McLaughlin stuff, and you know I'm going to do a certain number of songs, some of them might go back all the way to the farmer's song. And you may not have played that in a while. And I've asked other musicians this. Do you have to go back and go, Where's that change again? Do you listen to it or do you know it? I know, is that a stupid question?
No, it's not. As I once said at great personal risk to my karate instructor, there are no stupid questions. I got a pretty good whacking for that. No, the biggest risk with a thing like Farmer Song is, for me, when I'm performing, is I've performed it so many times that sometimes, you know, you go into a little bit of an autopilot mode and you start thinking, like, you know, what am I going to do next? You know, Whispering Rain or Down by the Henry Moore, and then you snap back into the song and you've completely forgotten where you are.
Right.
So suddenly you're... can't remember if you've sang the second verse or not, and people are going, I can't believe he forgot the words to the Farmer Song.
Does it bother you if people are out there screaming out the titles of songs when you want to get on with the new Murray McLaughlin?
No, the great thing about doing concerts is, first of all, the really hard and fast rules are that people like you better when the scenery falls down and your nose lights up and your pants fall down. But if you really get pissy about it, like if you react badly, they hate you. But if if it rolls off your back like water off a duck and you just make it part of the experience, people love you for it because you're human.
Yeah.
And even something as strange as, you know, you're in the middle of the song. If you stop the song and go, have I done the second verse yet? They'll love that shit.
The fact is, I mean, like a lot of singer-songwriters, I went through my period where... you know, I mean, oh, for God's sakes, I want to sing that again. I mean, it's like I've died. I want to play my new stuff. But somewhere along the line, I realized, well, the reason I'm playing that song is because it really means something to people. And a lot of people have come up and, you know, really thanked me for it, you know, shaken my hand or, you know, asked me to autograph a thing for their grandpa or their dad, mm-hmm. who actually were farmers. You know, old guys with hard hands have come up and said, thanks, you really wrote that song for me.
But that's a huge Canadian... that's one of those... huge Canadian songs that everybody knows.
On the strength of that song, something really interesting happened to me. This is a long time ago now. But do you remember a character named Studs Terkel?
Sure. Mm-hmm. He was a writer for the Chicago
Tribune, a syndicated radio show out of Chicago. He was a huge, like a real lion of American literature.
Kind of like an Andy Rooney figure.
Much more intelligent, but I guess that's a little... you know, Studs' seminal book was called Working. It was a series of interviews with Americans, just, you know, working class Americans. But anyway, I went on his radio show and I played on his radio show. And after I'd finished playing Farmer Song, he said, that's the reason I invited you to play on the radio, because I'd heard that song. And, you know, and he said, there's only three other people that have ever played music on my show. And I went, oh, wow, that's nice. And he said, you want to know who they are? And I said, okay, sure. And he said, Woody Guthrie, Bob Dylan, and John Prine.
Wow.
And I went, oh.
Sure.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
I think he liked the song.
I think he liked what it said. You know, mm-hmm. like the idea of like saying just a simple thank you to people who are, you know, I'm always on this soapbox that, you know, with the convergence of reality TV and social media and, you know, as my mother-in-law calls it, the interweb. Mm-hmm. That, you know, it seems like a lot of people get... I mean, I actually say this. A lot of people get a lot of attention for doing not very much. And, it's, you know, something that we could do... I think we could do better.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of reality television, you know, we have a reality television star as the president. Who'd have thought that would have happened?
I was hoping I'd get through a whole day without hearing his name, you know?
Yeah, let's leave it, because he and I can go. We could be here for hours yelling about Trump. I want to ask a question about the song.
Well, wait a minute. No, because it's, you know, because there's a Canadian angle to this. And what drives me nuts, like, since my son was 18 years old, I have, short of beating him with a stick, said, you are going to get your ass out and you're going to vote every municipal.
Yep.
Provincial, federal, because if you don't vote, you deserve what you get.
Sure.
So the thing that drives me nuts is when people don't show up to participate in the democratic process and take that for granted. I mean, you know, I hate to sound like an old Republican, but people died for this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something people should take for granted, because, you know, it can all disappear pretty quickly.
And if you don't vote, look what you get.
Well, exactly. That's it. Yeah,
I feel sorry for those folks who are demonstrating on the street in the United States. But I also go, like, well, you all showed up to vote for Barack Obama, you know, and
we've said the
where
same
were
thing.
You this time?
No, that's right. It wasn't voting that got Trump elected. It was not voting that got him elected.
Exactly.
And it's sad. And the same people that didn't vote are the ones complaining the most now. So
one would surmise. So, you know, my axe to grind is, you know, participate or you get what you deserve. You know, do we really actually want to have that schmuck for leader of the
free
Conservative
world.
Party in Canada?
It's funny you say that because I've always pounded that into my kids, too. In fact, I've heard conversations. Did you vote? Well, I guess so. I don't want Fred to find out I didn't.
It's interesting because what I was going to ask you about the farmer song is we were trying to figure out the other day when we were talking about you coming here, the lyric you, in the chorus, you say straw hats and old dirty hankies mopping a face like a shoe.
Yeah.
Explain.
Does it need explanation?
Yeah, well, obviously it does.
Well, there were some, way back when I went on the Ralph Emery show down in Nashville, I could sort of see people in the wings, you know, rustling through their thesauruses and such, trying to figure out what the hell that was. But it was, let's see, when you put like in it, it's a simile. So essentially it meant, you know, your face is like leather. So
right.
It's beaten by the sun, your face is like leather. So if your face is like a shoe, it's kind of like leather.
Murray
it
McLaughlin.
It just came out. What do I know? I'm a songwriter.
Liked it. My brother's name is Steve. He just texted me. He used to produce a show out west on CBC called Country West.
Mm-hmm.
And he says here, the first time you appeared on a show with K.D. Lang was in 1986.
Oh,
he had a television show.
Yeah, exactly. I remember that. Yeah.
And
K.D. Was very green at the time.
Yeah, in 86, she was just somebody in Alberta that was quirky and
Well, she was still doing cowpunk. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. It's sawed-off boots and crinolines and stuff, yeah. She was sort of wild, yeah.
I remember bouncing through CFNY wearing those outfits.
Yeah. Let's see if somebody has a call. Hi, who's this calling us? Hello?
Matt?
Hello? Well, that should be working.
Hello?
Go ahead, hit it again. All right. Murray McLaughlin, the new album is called Love Can't Tell Time. We're just about out of time. Before we leave serious, though, we got a couple things to take care of, and then we'll thank you. First thing we have to talk about is this song, Fred. Hang on, where is it? There we go.
Yeah.
We have to do a couple commercials, and we'll get to say goodbye.
Sure, go mental.
At Pizza Pizza, order online or on your app and get a free 2-for-1 Cineplex movie admission. Spend $13.99 or more and get dinner and a movie from Pizza Pizza. This is online only. The Cineplex promotion.
Wow.
Listen, while we play a little, I love this stuff, a little My Martini for Murray McLaughlin and Love Can't Tell Time. Let me tell you something about this thing. It's FYI Music News, our good friends, the Slate family, supporting Canadian music as they often do, a journal about Canada's music industry. And look here, on this day, Murray McLaughlin has learned to smile. It's an article written by, by Kerry Duell.
Yeah, he's a great guy, actually.
And here's a picture of Murray. So the synchronicity is complete, the circle of life. FYI Music News. For more information about Murray and all kind of things, please go there and support our good friends at Journal about Canada's music industry, as I say, FYIMusicNews.ca.
It's only one color, but that color is...
Why does that song make you laugh so much? I love this song.
No, it's the headline that makes me laugh.
Oh, Murray McLaughlin has learned to smile.
Yeah.
Is your reputation of a cantankerous sort?
I guess. I mean, I'm the only person I know who's got my own personal Ronnie Hawkins quote.
Which is?
Oh, Ronnie once said, Murray McLaughlin, he could piss off Jesus.
That's funny. There's a line here at the in the beginning of this article. Murray's talking about songwriting and distilling songs. And he said, songwriting isn't about you or people will just go, fuck off, you wanker. And that's a good place to say thank you so much for coming in. I hope you had a good experience.
I did. Thank you. And the coffee was lovely.
Yeah, it's a nice warm environment.
Much needed.
It's too. Starbucks. Only the best.
Really?
Oh, yeah. When people of your stature come in, we reach for the Starbucks.
Just hang on. I have to look at my Rolex watch and check the time.
It's available on Spotify, it's on iTunes, and for information about Murray and Lunch at Allen's, I'm assuming you can just go to, does Lunch at Allen's have a site? I'm sure
Lunch at Allen's has a website. There's information about it on the True North Records website. And I, too, have a website. I am no longer a Luddite, believe it or not.
And it's MurrayMcLaughlin.com, or does somebody else own your name?
No, I got it back I at great personal risk.
Oh, really?
Well, what an experience. Give our best to your lovely Denise.
Ms. Denise Donovan, I certainly will. Yeah, you bet.
And, you know, thanks. That was
thanks
great.
Thanks for we doing hope. The little thing for the May the 5th Glenn Gould thing.
Oh, we'll do that for sure.
It's really quite important to me. You know what it's for is to put it's put that singing program in respite centers.
Yeah, we're still on the air. I know it seems like we're off.
Sorry.
We're going to say goodbye in a second.
Oh, okay.
We're just saying goodbye to you because in about 30 seconds we're off the air live, and then sometimes we keep going. It depends, but yeah, we'll put up the May 5th. It's called what?
Voices That Care.
All right, my friend.
May 5th, Glenn Gould Theater.
What an experience!
You want to hear Margaret Atwood sing?
Yeah, that's cool.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
And
do we want to?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Are you nuts?
Of course.
What are you, nuts?
What are you? That's one word. What are you?
What are you? Are you nuts?
This episode of Humble and Fred Radio is brought to you by Sleep Country, Pizza Pizza, FYI Music News, and the Retirement Sherpa. And as always, we broadcast to the world from the center of Canada's universe, Toronto, nestled in the cozy bosom of the Squatty Potty Storefront Studios and 5-Hour Energy Performance Zone. More Humble and Fred tomorrow and online at humbleandfredradio.com.